plugged in, I could do something.
Well, here you are. Friday's never too bad a day.
Right, right. I can't get the timer on. No power.
There it goes. Let me just start by welcoming you to the California Coastal Commission meeting and ask that the clerk, we'll call the meeting to order and ask that the clerk call the roll.
Present.
Here.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Potter?
Yeah.
Yancy?
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
Here.
Commissioner Wan?
Here.
Vice Chair Neely?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, and we want to welcome this morning Audie Lieberman, who's alternate for for Chairman Kruer. Welcome. Would you like to say a few words?
I'll just say briefly that after appearing many times before the Coastal Commission on the other side of that podium there, it's nice to be here on this side, and it's nice to see old friends and to meet new colleagues.
Great, welcome. And then let's go to staff to see if there are any changes in the agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. There are three changes to the agenda. There's a memorandum that was distributed this morning that includes two of those changes, but I understand there's a third one. And that is on page 15 of the agenda, item 3, the federal consistency report has been postponed. Then also on page 15, item 4A, which is the consistency determination from the Corps of Engineers involving San Diego County, that's postponed. And then as marked in the final agenda on page 16, item 7A, the City of Eureka LCP amendment has been postponed as well. And I'll take this opportunity to just remind the audience that if anyone would like to address the commission today during the public hearings, it's necessary to fill out a speaker slip that's on the table outside the room. Fill one of those out, hand it to staff, and you'll be recognized to speak. And outside the entrance also, you'll find addendums for today's meeting and a binder with staff reports for today's consideration as well. And lastly, I'd like to just remind everybody to please turn off your cell phones during the meeting. And with the postponement of the federal consistency items, that brings us to item 5, which is the North Coast Deputy Director's Report. And I just have a few housekeeping items. Apologize for distributing the packets this morning. We were coming down from Eureka and had lots of flight delays. We got in at about 1:30 in the morning, so I figured you wouldn't want to read them then, so we distributed them this morning. And they include a pink deputy director's report, a staff addendum for item 5A, which is the briefing on the Humboldt Bay Harbor District dredge disposal issue, a staff addendum for item 7B, which is the Fort Bragg LCP amendment, a staff addendum for item 8A, which is the Caltrans permit application for the Mad Rivers Bridge project, and there are actually two addendums for that item. There's one that the second one contains a small correction to the first. And then I believe there was a letter from Attorney James Jackson regarding the Fort Bragg LCP amendment that was also distributed to your tables. The pink addendum contains two permit waivers, and we're aware of no opposition to these items and recommend that the commission concur with the executive director's determination regarding these items. Through the chair, we'd ask whether there are any questions or objections.
Okay. Are there any objections to finding concurrence with the director's determination? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Okay, and then that brings us to item 5A, which is the briefing on the Humboldt Bay Harbor District dredge disposal situation. This briefing is on a permit condition compliance matter that was of particular interest to the commission when the original permit was granted. We'll present some background on this and then simply ask for your concurrence in the staff's proposed course of action. The permit, as you may recall, was issued in February 2006 to the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District to perform maintenance dredging within the Woodley Island Marina. And it involved the removal of up to 120,000 cubic yards of sediment and disposing of the material in the near shore zone along the beach on the Samoa Peninsula. And during the hearing, several commissioners noted that the commission would not have approved nearshore disposal were it not for the lack of an identified feasible alternative at that time that could accommodate the needed dredging in a timely fashion. The commissioners commented that the commission would be unlikely to approve additional nearshore disposal with future dredging cycles that would occur. And the commission recommended that the applicants begin examining alternative disposal sites. A subsequent amendment was approved by the commission a year later, and with that amendment, the commission added a condition that requires the Harbor District to submit by December 31st of each year for the review and approval of the executive director a progress report on efforts undertaken during that previous year on finding an alternative disposal site. And it's to include certain information that shows progress in that regard. For compliance with that condition, the Harbor District did submit earlier this week the letter report that's attached to the addendum that's distributed on this item. And it identifies a series of action that the district took in 2007, which included completing the actual dredging that had been approved under the original permit. And then in the course of budget discussions, discussing relative costs of general disposal alternatives. And the more significant thing was the district convened an interagency meeting, which became the first of what the district hopes for as a series of meetings of the group on dredge materials management for the district. And the progress report indicates that the district anticipates having further meetings of this group, having further budget discussions, and working with the regional board on permitting a previously used dredge materials disposal site on the Samoa Peninsula for possible use by the district. Our staff participated in the meeting of the interagency group conducted by the district, and I must say that it was a little frustrating at the beginning of the meeting as representatives of the district and the city of Eureka, who also used the same disposal site, questioned whether the commission really intended to preclude nearshore disposal for future dredging cycles. We took the opportunity to remind everybody that the commissioner's comments made during the hearings were all definitive in indicating that the commission does not intend to authorize nearshore disposal again, and that the commission unanimously approved the amendment with Special Condition 17, which requires this progress report that was submitted to find an alternative disposal site. In addition, a representative of the EPA discussed how under the federal approval process, to allow for the federal government to allow disposal at that location in the future would require designation of the site as a offshore or as a federal disposal site, which is a very lengthy and difficult process, and he did not offer any hope that that would be successful. But overall, we feel the meeting was very useful in that it's going to take the involvement of the interagency partners to assist the district in identifying and developing the information needed on feasible disposal alternatives. And our staff intends to continue and participate in those meetings and try to assist in the effort of finding a useful site that would avoid the nearshore disposal. However, we are cognizant of the fact that even though the next dredging cycle may be 6 or 7 years away, there's a lot of work to be done before a site can be actually feasibly provided. And so therefore, with the commission's concurrence, we intend to include in our letter approving this dredge disposal report certain progress milestones that we would indicate we feel should be accomplished by the district in 2008. We're thinking that through the efforts of the district and the interagency group, that the district should at least be able to accomplish four main steps. First, identifying specific dredge disposal alternatives. Secondly, developing a preliminary evaluation of the feasibility of these alternatives. Thirdly, identifying funding sources for the alternative disposal sites. And then identifying further technical studies that would be needed. We believe that if that much progress could be made in 2008, the district would be on a solid footing for truly finding an alternative disposal site. So at this time, I'd be happy to address any questions you have. And I don't know that there's anyone here in the audience to speak. The district itself was not able to attend today. That concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, staff. Do we have any ex partes on this item? Okay, seeing none, Commissioner comments? Supervisor Juan, or Commissioner Juan, sorry.
I got elevated. I think it really is important for this commission to again reiterate that we were very clear that we are serious about this issue of not disposing in the near shore environment. I don't think that there was anybody on the commission. It wasn't equivocal at all, and I'm amazed to hear that they still think it wasn't. And I think your approach to setting these guidelines as to what needs to happen and when is very important, and it's important that they take it seriously and that you don't come back to us at the end of the year and say, well, they didn't do it, because I think they need to hear the message that, as the commission said, that they're not going to get permission to do this again, and that what we don't want is to have an emergency situation take place, because then they're going to have to deal with an emergency that they're not going to get permission to use the near shore.
Any other comments? Well, let me just say I want to commend the staff for putting together that interagency group, and I think that it will be very helpful in this process. And I think the vote was very close when the dredging was approved. I think the executive director did speak at the microphone and accept the conditions, including acknowledging the fact that there would have to be new information developed in terms of disposal of dredging for the future.
And Madam Chair, if I may,
people who are not familiar with how the commission operates, when several commissioners made the comment, and I believe that you were one of them at the time, that you wanted to make sure the district understood that this commission is unlikely to approve a nearshore disposal again in the future. And because other commissioners didn't then weigh in, that doesn't mean they didn't support it. Because if some commissioners objected to what you were saying, they would have said so.
Right.
So I think people watching should understand that that's the way this commission operates. And so when you only have one or two commissioners actually saying something but nobody else objects to it, we take that as direction from the commission.
All right. Any other comments? Then are there any objections to concurrence with this matter? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Before Bob goes on, I just wanted to tell you, I am going to report to you about that violation issue down in Laguna Beach you asked me to come back and talk to you about today.
Okay.
And I'll also make some brief observations on the budget.
Very good.
Okay. There is no consent calendar for the North Coast, and as I mentioned, the City of Eureka LCP amendment was postponed. So that brings us to item 7B, which is the City of Fort Bragg LCP amendment, which is their update, comprehensive update of their LCP, which was first certified in 1983. The there are, as I mentioned, there's some handouts. There's a staff addendum distributed yesterday that contains various changes to the suggested modifications and supplemental findings, as well as a number of letters, including a letter from the City of Fort Bragg. And then there's also a letter from Attorney James Jackson that was distributed. And I'll note there are sets of hard copies of the exhibits for the Fort Bragg LCP amendment. I think there are a total of six of them distributed around, and you'll need to share. They're very thick documents, so we sent those to you in electronic form on a CD at the time the staff report was mailed to save paper and postage. But we do have those hard copies available for you if you wish to refer to them. The commission opened the hearing on this item at last month's meeting in San Francisco. At that time, the city had requested that the commission continue the hearing to allow the city more time to review the suggested modifications. The commission did continue the item to this month's meeting and did not take testimony at that meeting. Before we get into the body of our presentation, I'd like to express our appreciation to the city, and the City Council, and also especially to City Manager Linda Roofing and Community Development Director Marie Jones for their extremely dedicated work on the LCP update and for the tremendous help they've given us over the course of the last several months, as we've met many times by phone and in person to try to work out the various concerns that we have. And I think it's to their credit that we've been able to reduce the issues to a handful. I also wish to publicly recognize the great work performed by our staff analyst, Tiffany Tauber, who has literally spent hundreds of hours working on this amendment, and we greatly appreciate her professional efforts in reviewing the amendment and developing the staff report. And we will give a team presentation today, and I'd like to turn the microphone over to Tiffany, who will present the first part of the presentation.
Your mic's not on.
Is it on? Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. I'd like to take a few minutes to give you some background on the city's LCP and to orient you to the city of Fort Bragg. I have just a few slides I'd like to show you to do that, and then I'll briefly describe the amendment and the staff recommendation. I'll also briefly describe the addendum that's been provided to you on this item. The city of Fort Bragg has spent the past several years preparing the proposed amendment to the city's LCP, which constitutes the first comprehensive update. Is that okay? There. Thanks. Sorry about that. The City of Fort Bragg has spent the past several years preparing the proposed amendment to the city's LCP, which constitutes the first comprehensive update.
Sounds like it's back on again, though.
Is that okay now? Try again. As I was saying, this is the first comprehensive update to the city's LCP since it was originally certified in 1983. The commission has certified several LCP amendments since that time, but the city has used this LCP amendment as a significant opportunity to bring the LCP up to date with current planning and development standards, particularly with regard to the protection of the city's coastal resources. Although staff is recommending numerous suggested modifications, which I'll discuss in a few minutes, overall, the LCP amendment as proposed by the city constitutes a far more comprehensive, detailed, and improved LCP than the city's currently certified land use plan and zoning ordinance. I'd like to take a few minutes to orient you to the city of Fort Bragg for those of you who may not be familiar with the city, and I have just a few slides I'll show you quickly. The first here on the screen is an aerial photo of this city, and Fort Bragg is the largest coastal city in Mendocino County with a population of about 7,000 people. The city is perched on a coastal terrace and is generally situated between two waterways, including Pudding Creek here to the north and the Noyo River down here to the south. The coastal zone boundary through the city is generally coterminous with Highway 1, which is located here, the coastal zone being primarily to the west of the highway, with the exception of an area down here east of the highway around the Noyo River. There's also a portion of the city's coastal zone here in this area known as Todd Point, with the western portion of this area falls within the county's unincorporated area. Some of the primary land uses within the coastal zone of the city include the commercial development, which is located primarily along Highway 1, including visitor-serving facilities. And I note that unlike many coastal cities, Fort Bragg actually has an abundance of lower-cost visitor-serving facilities, which again are primarily located along the highway. There are a higher density residential development located to the north, in an area known as the West Fort Bragg neighborhood, as well as some lower density residential areas down here, again in this area known as Todd Point. One of the most unique features of the city is the approximately 400-acre former Georgia Pacific mill site, which is on the coastal terrace west of the highway and west of the city center, and is this area that you see here in the photo. The Georgia-Pacific Mill ceased operations in 2002, and the site is currently undergoing an extensive cleanup process, and the city is engaged in planning for the future uses of the site. This area actually comprises approximately 60% of the city's coastal zone. This site, however, is not addressed by this LCP amendment. Other than being redesignated and rezoned from heavy industrial to a newly created designation called Timber Resources Industrial. As proposed, this designation would allow for the timber resource-related land uses that have historically occurred on the site to continue while the planning for future uses of the site is underway. The LCP, as amended, requires a specific plan be prepared before any further changes to the land use designation or zoning could occur at the site. And any such specific plan would be required to be submitted to the Coastal Commission for certification as an LCP amendment. Therefore, I want to emphasize that the specific planning for this Georgia Pacific Mill site is not a part of the LCP before the Commission at this time. I do want to point out that the city has already been engaged in planning efforts with the Coastal Conservancy and other agencies to provide access at the site, which will eventually provide tremendous public access opportunities throughout the area, including a connection to the California Coastal Trail along this portion of the coast. Commission staff will be working closely with the city as specific planning efforts for the GP Mill site continue over the next several years. The last area I want to point out is the Noyo Harbor area, which is located down here to the south of the city. This is the site of many Coastal Act priority uses, including commercial and recreational fishing port. The majority of the harbor is located outside of the city limits in unincorporated counting areas and is governed by the Mendocino County LCP. However, there is currently an area of deferred certification known as the Noyo River Flats, which includes approximately 13 acres on the north bank of the Noyo River. The previous denial of certification of this area was based on issues surrounding inadequate protection of wetlands that occur in this area. The city is proposing to certify this area as part of this LCP update, and staff has included several suggested modifications to ensure the protection of the wetlands consistent with Coastal Act requirements. I'll just briefly show you some of these other photos to give you a sense of the city. This is the northern waterway that I pointed out, Pudding Creek, and this photo shows the Pudding Creek Trestle, which has been recently rehabilitated by state parks and provides a unique public access connection here. This is another photo looking from the west across a portion of the Georgia Pacific Mill site towards the city in the background. You can see Highway 1 and the concentration of development there on the east side outside of the coastal zone. But you can see here the proximity of the Georgia Pacific Mill site and the expanse of it, again shown here relative to the coast, and the opportunity that this presents for future planning. Again, just moving toward the south, the GP Mill site here in the foreground and the city of Fort Bragg in the background. Again, looking towards the north across the Georgia Pacific, former Georgia Pacific Mill site, the city in the background. And this is the Noyo River and a portion of the Noyo Harbor that I mentioned as well. And the Noyo River Bridge here, which many of you are familiar with.
Are you familiar with the rails on that bridge?
I wish I could zoom in here to show you a better view of those. But so in general, the city's proposed LCP amendment consists of a new general plan adopted by the city to replace the currently certified LUP and a new zoning ordinance entitled the Land Use and Development Code, which would replace the currently certified zoning ordinance. Both documents constitute a complete update of the majority of the city's programs and policies and are in an entirely different format than the currently certified LUP and IEP, as described in detail in the staff report. The staff is recommending denial of the LCP amendment as submitted and approval with suggested modifications. The changes included in the suggested modifications recommended by staff are numerous for several reasons. First, in addition to policy changes necessary for compliance with the Coastal Act, Many of the changes that are included in the suggested modifications relate to the reorganization of the documents to apply specifically to the coastal zone. The general plan and development code submitted by the city were originally prepared to apply to both coastal and inland portions of the city. And following several discussions between city staff and commission staff, it was determined that developing a separate general plan and a separate development code to apply specifically to the geographic portion of the city located within the coastal zone would provide greater clarity of the documents and improve the usability and administration of the LCP. So many of the suggested modifications that you see throughout the documents that we've put on your tables are related to the reorganization of the documents. In addition to these changes necessary for reorganization purposes, the suggested modifications also include what are known as friendly modifications, and those are changes that have been specifically requested by the city that staff has accommodated through suggested modifications. Secondly, the modifications also are numerous because the IP portion of the LCP submittal was prepared several years after the general plan. And so many of the suggested modifications are to ensure consistency between the two documents and update those policies and programs that had become outdated. As Bob has mentioned, staff has had numerous meetings with the city representatives over the past several months to discuss the suggested modifications in the staff recommendation. And the majority of the concerns expressed by the city to date about particular modifications have been resolved. And many changes requested by the city during the during these meetings are changes that staff agrees with. And staff has made these certain additions, clarifications, and corrections accordingly. Staff has prepared an addendum that you have in front of you that includes further changes that have arisen in discussions with the city since the mailing of the staff report, and the majority of these changes are quite minor in nature. More significantly, pages 6 through 12 of your addendum include a portion of the letter from the city that outlines several outstanding issues that the city and the staff have not come to complete agreement on. The addendum responds to the city's issues and provides alternative revisions to suggested modifications in some cases where staff disagrees with all or a portion of the city's requested revisions. Two of these primary areas of outstanding controversy remaining at this time include, first, requiring the reservation of adequate services to serve existing and future probable future priority uses. And secondly, an issue surrounding allowing pipelines and utility lines to be located within environmentally sensitive habitat areas. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Mr. Merrill, and he'll discuss some of these issues in more detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany. with regard to the adequate services for priority use issue, one of the two issues that Tiffany mentioned there's still some disagreement with the city about. The suggested modifications recommended by staff include the addition of policy PFB to the city's proposed LUP that would require certain residential development that's allowed by conditional use permit, including as well as land divisions. When those are proposed, they are required to not only demonstrate that they have adequate services to serve the development, but that there's enough capacity for sewer and water to serve existing and proposed coastal-dependent land uses, such as visitor-serving facilities, commercial fishing, etc. As described in the narrative text of the public facilities element of the land use plan, the city anticipates making certain future improvements to its water supply and sewer infrastructure in the future, but currently the development that would be allowed by the existing certified LCP cannot be accommodated if it were all to be built out today by the capacity that presently exists. So we feel that this issue is of great significance, given that there is some uncertainty about the timing of these improvements and making sure that there'll be adequate capacity to serve priority uses when those uses come on board. The city's expressed an objection on the basis that it's not clear how the policy would be implemented, And the city has stated that while it may be possible to apply the policy to existing priority uses, it would be especially difficult to identify projected future priority uses and assess and reserve an adequate level of services for those uses. Also, the city indicated that policy PFB was overly broad and cumbersome and requests that the policy be deleted. Staff believes that the policy is necessary and should not be deleted, as it does provide a mechanism to at least ensure that services needed to serve priority uses would not be precluded by other types of discretionary development, such as land divisions and conditionally permitted residential uses. However, we do agree that the original version of the policy is cumbersome, and you'll find in the addendum on page 4, there's a revised version of the policy with that we've greatly simplified the structure and the wording to hopefully make it less cumbersome to use. The we believe that implementation of this policy would basically require involving, at the time a development is proposed, conducting an inventory of existing priority uses, as well as the authorized priority uses that have not yet been built, and looking at the probable existing probable future priority uses, and assessing the amount of services necessary to serve those uses, together with the amount of services that are needed to serve the proposed development, and just demonstrating that there's sufficient service to serve both the priority uses and the development. Many conditional uses that don't involve an expansion of density, the analysis may be very quite simple to just say that there's no need for expansion of capacity. The second issue is, as Ms. Tauber indicated, was a concern about allowing pipelines and utility lines to go through riparian ESHA and other kinds of ESHA in the city. The LCP suggested modifications do allow buried pipelines and utility lines to be installed within buffers, and consistent with Section 302.33A4, which allows such uses within wetlands, it's allowed within wetlands as well. However, the Coastal Act, Section 302.40 on ESHA, limits any use of ESHA to only uses that are dependent on those resources. And the installation of pipelines, cables, and other utility lines, we feel, would not be consistent with that provision. However, in many cases, it's possible to still install underground cable pipelines and utility lines using directional drilling methods. And so we added some modifications to policy OS-ESHA-E, which addresses this, to point out that the installation in pipelines and utility lines using directional drilling underneath the ESHA is an allowable use in that area as well. We note that the language does not mandate that this process be used. It's also possible that such lines could be rerouted around the ESHA. But we believe that in cases where it just isn't feasible to do either, that Section 302.40 simply precludes such development. And so that's why we're sticking with the recommendation on policy OS-ESHA-E. So in conclusion, staff recommends that upon the conclusion of the hearing today that the commission deny both the land use plan and implementation plan as submitted, and then certify both portions of the amendment if modified to incorporate the suggested mods listed in the staff recommendation as well as the addendum. And that concludes my remarks, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Madam Chair, excuse me. Thank you, staff. Let me go to my left and see if there are any ex parte communications. On the right? Seeing none, we'll open the public hearing. We have two speaker slips. Doug Hammerstrom from the mayor of the city of Fort Bragg and Marie Jones are the only two that have signed up to speak. If there are other speakers, if you want to get your slips in, we'll...
Jerry Mello also.
Okay. Well, we can take you, take Jerry, and then you can fill out a slip afterwards. So whoever wants to go first, there are no speaker slips in opposition, so we'll give you, would 15 minutes be all right? How much time would you like, sir? Would you come onto the microphone? You'd like to? Okay. We'll give you 20 minutes total. He wants to take 10.
Okay, thank you. I'm Doug Hammerstrom, the mayor of Fort Bragg, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and thank you for all the work that you do protecting the coast, which we all love. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the City Council and the citizens of Fort Bragg, who all have an intense interest in your review of our planning documents. To us, these plans are not simply regulatory regimen, but they're a vision for the future of our city. And they're also a set of agreed upon responsibilities which we pledge to each other after community discussion. So we appreciate that your staff and ours have worked together to make this a better document by changing language for consistency with the Coastal Act, for reorganizing the document for clarity, and for incorporating a number of additional items that the community has had discussion about during the pendency of this document before you. We really do feel that community discussion is very important. Additional discussion refines proposals, makes them better, and discussion allows the public to understand the reasons, and this results in ease of administration down the line. I think we're close to agreement, but there are some remaining differences. And Marie Jones, our community development director, will discuss those further. I just wanted to say that our community, while being fully supportive of coastal protection, we see these land use documents as needing to address some additional concerns. And I think in that lies our remaining differences. And one example I would cite of these additional concerns is that as a city in the coastal zone, one of the things that we find important in our planning direction is that we facilitate that urban development pressures in our area get directed into an urban city setting. And this, I think, enhances coastal values as well, because it reduces sprawl, it allows for fewer car trips. These are both things that help in terms of global climate change, and global climate change can have great effects on the ocean. So I would like you to also see these planning values that we have as also enhancing the coastal protection that is your prime directive. And we hope that you will see and support the need for what I think is now characterized as our last few requests for modifications of the current staff report. For the future, I would like to say that we hope that your staff can respond with their concerns at an earlier point in the process. I think it would be helpful for all of us if in the future that were what we look to. I think this, we received some hundreds of modifications in December. This was after our last council meeting of the year. The community has not had an opportunity to comment on any of this. And I think it's only because a superhuman effort by Marie and Linda and Tiffany and Bob that we've gotten as much discussion of these items as we have, and we've gotten to this point, and we should all appreciate that we have these superhumans on our staff that are able to do that. But for the future, I think we would all want a better process. And we have a couple of items that are very important to both our city and the coastal zone. The mill site is the bulk of the property in the coastal zone in Fort Bragg. And in the near future, there will be many discussions which your agency and our agency and many other state agencies need to have regarding remediation of that mill site and regarding a specific plan process for that mill site with Roof Sergeant. So we hope that in the future that we have the comments and the participation of the Coastal Commission staff in an earlier point in the
city of Fort Bragg defining much of the development within the coastal zone. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. And the next speaker is Marie Jones. Welcome, Marie. Only gone to 6 minutes, so whatever's left.
And I'd also like to begin by giving effusive thanks to both Tiffany and Robert. We did work on this project very collaboratively, many, many conference calls that lasted for many, many hours. So we both have very deep knowledge now of our land use development code and our general plan and consequently our LCP. I think over the past 2 months, our close collaboration has led to the resolution of many of our initial issues and have essentially created a document that's much stronger than it was when we first submitted it, and also much stronger than it was when the Coastal Commission staff first submitted their modifications. That said, I would say that there are still three main areas of disagreement, not two, between where the city stands and where the Coastal Commission staff stand on this issue. The first is around reserving service capacity for coastal-dependent uses and
permitted residential uses within the coastal zone and within the city of Fort Bragg. I want to correct Bob Merrill a little bit on his representation of that policy. That policy would essentially require that the city, when a new development project comes in that requires a use permit, look at all existing potential future uses that are permitted residential and all existing potential future uses that are permitted coastal, that are use permit or permitted coastal dependent uses before allocating capacity to residential uses that require a use permit. This means a project that's as small as a 5-unit multifamily development would have to get behind everybody else in the line, some of which may not even be in the line. It also means that the city council would and the planning commission would have to use a determination whether something requires a use permit or does not require a use permit in a residential development area, would have to give preference to those that do not require a use permit. And I don't think that was the intention of the council when deciding which developments would require a use permit or not. So, for example, we have now in front of us the planned and proposed a 79 multifamily development for Hare Creek, a unit, 79 unit. We also have an assisted living project that's 110 residential beds. So we would be required, if this policy is passed and the city accepts it, to give preference to the multifamily over the assisted care facility. And I don't think that was the intent of the Planning Commission or the community when they decided which would be a use permit and which would be permitted use. So I just want to make that clarification. The issue on pipelines in Esha at first seems simple and easy. However, right now, the city has just approved a coastal development permit to relocate a sewer force mine that goes through Pudding Creek. This sewer force mine in a heavy wave action in the past has been lifted out of the creek and at any point could essentially, given good enough wave action, be destroyed and release a lot of sewage onto our beach, which none of us want. In order to put in this sewer force main, we have to cross a very small riparian creek that runs out of, to relocate the sewer force main up onto Highway 1, we have to cross a very small riparian creek that goes across the sand dunes. I'm not sure how you do directional drilling in sand dunes. So you can see how this policy on its face may make sense, but in particular applications can be extremely problematic. We also see some potentials for a very problematic application of this policy on the mill site as we try and realign our natural drainage features out there and relocate, I guess, the mill pond, which is a seismically unsafe impoundment of 8 acres, and we will create Esha when we do that, and we may have issues with sewer and water treatment for the entire mill site that this policy would cause implications for. And then the final area of disagreement has to do with, I'm going to go to the section in the document. It's on page 8 of the addendum, and it's item number 4. And again, I think the staff of the Coastal Commission really came very close to meeting our needs here. However, the problem that we have with this policy as they've rewritten our rewriting, we've done a lot of this rewriting and rewriting our policies. It gets pretty interesting. But when the city makes expansion decisions on our water supply or sewer supply, those are basically expansion decisions that are made to meet current needs. And so essentially what this policy would require the city to do would be, when we put in a new sewer line, to guesstimate how much coastal-dependent development would occur on that sewer line and size that sewer line appropriately, which would blatantly cause a big cost impact to the city. And secondarily, we wouldn't have the development fees associated with that development to pay for that sewage increase. So it essentially puts a larger burden on our population in terms of financing capacity increases on our sewer system. In addition, the reality around sewer and water in a city like Fort Bragg is we do not have terribly deep coffers, and much of our improvement is very incremental. So the idea that we can do improvement that would meet the entire needs of future potential development, well, most of our improvements are quite incremental. We can't meet all the future needs in that way just because of a cost and a timing issue. So that one is really kind of a problem for us as revised. That said, again, I want to reiterate my appreciation to Robert and Tiffany for all their hard work. This has been rather a grueling process for us, especially, I think, given that it fell on the holidays for both of our teams. And our city is very busy right now. We're starting our specific planning process for the mill site, and really, really do encourage the Coastal Commissions yourselves to come up to the site and see it before we're finished with our specific plan and be engaged in that process, because the last thing we want to do is have 800 amendments to our specific plan after we've gone through a community process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry Mello from the City of Fort Bragg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Jerry Mello. I'm a City Council member of Fort Bragg, and I am not going to take 8 minutes and 25 seconds. I'm going to simply concur with
what... The microphone isn't working for the speaker.
Probably better off.
There it is.
There we go. Thank you. I'm going to concur with what Mayor Doug and what Marie Jones had to say, and particularly with respect to the effort that Bob and Tiffany have put into this. I hope you will listen to our reasoning as to why we still have some outstanding matters that are very important to us. Wow, that really came in, didn't it? And in any event, I think Marie outlined one of the very practical ones, and that is the slant drilling through a sand dune for a sewer line that needs to be replaced. So you can be assured that I'm sort of off balance. The power went out in our town for 4 days when the storm hit here about a week ago, so I counted up the amendments, and there were 888 between the land use code and the local coastal plan, general plan. I need to see how all these fit together. I'm pleased to come here this morning and find that 9 of the 11 items in our January 9th letter, day before yesterday, have been agreed to. But we need to get down and look at how this thing will be applied. So, and not only that, I really want to emphasize what Mayor Doug had to say, which was that we need to brief the people in Fort Bragg publicly. We need to comply with the Brown Act and, in my opinion, probably CEQA before we come back and accept and agree to whatever is going to be our local coastal plan. That having been said, it's important for us to replace the 25-year-old local coastal plan that we currently have, and the primary reason for that is that you're going to be seeing a specific plan in a few years which will address the mill site, which we all saw in the pictures, a place that operated as a sawmill for 117 years is now going to be incorporated as urban development. So thank you for your consideration. I hope you will consider the city input on this and understand that we need to go public through our own process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mello. All right, there are no other speakers on this item, so we'll close the public hearing and go back to the staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few comments. One, I would note in response to Mayor Hammerstrom's comments that we would very much like to be able to participate more frequently and often on planning matters. With our staff resources the way they are and looming budget cuts, it gets increasingly difficult. That being said, we have indicated to the city that we consider the future planning for the Georgia Pacific lands, since it involves such a significant part of the coastline in that area, and is a real opportunity for doing coastal planning and providing for a range of appropriate uses. We consider that to be a priority, and we have committed to doing the best we can at trying to provide early coordination. It's very apparent from working through this LCP amendment that there's a lot of issues that are going to come up with that Georgia Pacific site, and so we're going to do our best to participate as much as we can, and more than we were able to in the past, we hope. As far as some of the specific comments from Ms. Jones, there is some burden in the sense of development that's proposed that might affect priority uses, conditional residential uses, and land divisions in analyzing what's needed to protect priority uses. But the Coastal Act does give that priority to priority uses. And we feel that that concept is important, and we don't see it as unworkable. Yes, there'll be more effort involved in looking at the known probable future priority uses and what's existing and what's been approved but not built. But we don't see that as a extremely difficult thing to do. And so we'd recommend that the commission adopt the revised policy language for policy PFB. The sewer line for Pudding Creek, you know, there may be some difficulties. We'd have to look at alternatives and see an analysis of whether there are ways of installing the line underneath the habitat. That might be a way of avoiding it. Sounds like directional drilling itself has some problems, but we need to really examine those alternatives. And if it can't go through the dunes, then it may need to look at some rerouting. There are areas adjacent that are not ESHA that perhaps could be considered. The mill pond that was mentioned is contained within the Georgia Pacific lands, and to the extent that there needs to be unique solutions developed for addressing concerns about how you know, these wetland policies might affect the mill pond in particular, we'll all have an opportunity as we review the specific area plan for the GP site to look at what's the most appropriate solution and adopt policies that can provide the feasible environmentally protective solution that will work in that location. And so with that, again, I just want to reiterate our appreciation to the city for their efforts.
All right.
Yes, and Madam Chair, the observation I would make is that as the commission has dealt with these kinds of issues before, what we do have the flexibility to do is that when the commission adopts suggested modifications and it goes back to the local government for them to consider what you've acted on or done, there are occasions when the local government comes back and says, well, we understand what the commission wanted, but here's the way that we think we can accomplish the purpose that was intended in the suggested modification. And it may not be exactly what you approved, but it accomplishes the same thing. And then we can come back to you for when it comes back as executive director's checkoff and say, you know, this is in conformance with what you did. So there is still some opportunity here for us to work with the city if they have some suggestions as to how to accomplish the goal of making sure priority uses are given the kind of priority for services. So I just wanted to make that point so that the city doesn't go away and think that there is no way we can continue to work on this issue.
Okay, very good. I'll bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Schallenberger.
I move the commission certify City of Fort Bragg Land Use Plan Amendment FTB-MAJ-1-06 as submitted and recommend a no vote.
I second.
Okay. It was moved by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Commissioner Blank. And Failure of this motion will result in the denial of the land use plan amendment as submitted and adoption of the resolutions and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I would. I'd like to start off just by commending the city and, of course, our own staff on obviously heroic work here on this. After 25 years, it seems to me that updating an LCP is almost the same as starting from scratch, given the changes that have happened on the ground during those 25 years. So I think it's a job well done. I also commend the city. I can't tell you how refreshing it is to hear a city saying before we can actually accept any of these, we need to go back to our citizens and have a public hearing on it. Hopefully you did not witness firsthand what we witnessed on Wednesday, which is a local government who appeared to be completely uninterested in taking something as major as updates to their LCP back to their citizens. So I commend you for that and thank you for that. The reason that I am recommending a no vote as submitted is that I, despite all the fabulous work that's been done and all of the agreement that's been reached, these outstanding issues, I think the staff has made a very strong case that as submitted, it is inconsistent with the Coastal Act, which is our standard of review. I think that we are left with no option other than to reject it as submitted.
Okay. Commissioner Blank? All right. We have a motion and a second. The makers are recommending a no vote. Are there any other comments? Commissioner Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to also add my compliments to our staff and to the city of Fort Bragg. And I particularly appreciate seeing the elected officials from another coastal city here. I'd point out to my colleagues that Jerry Milo is the League's Board of Director, head of the local coastal cities working group, and has been dedicated at trying to bring about greater harmony and understanding between coastal cities in California and the California Coastal Commission, and I appreciate all of his efforts in that regard, and I've worked with him on that. So I guess, and hearing Commissioner Schallenberg's points, I absolutely agree with them. One of the areas that I think Ms. Jones brought up, though, that I would like to hear for a little bit more discussion on is the third issue that she brought up, and this is actually a question for staff. She characterized the fact that in Fort Bragg, much, if not all, the development is incremental. Well, that's true in almost every city, but it's incremental. They have limited resources, and I think about it in the context that they think about it, because I am from a coastal city as an elected. How do you estimate accurately, predictively, the future use when you've got incremental development and ensure that you're going to meet capacity for the future in terms of the infrastructure needs? I'm not sure how you do that. And are we creating an unintended consequence of impossibility of accurately and correctly dealing with this condition? So that's a question for staff.
Well, it is complicated further in that good portion of the city is outside the coastal zone as well, and how do you take into account the needs of growth both in and out of the coastal zone? I think, though, that in very broad terms, any public infrastructure development has a sense of the demand for their facilities, the needs that they're going to need to make in the future. And there's some information that can be drawn upon as to anticipated growth and the need, the services that are needed to provide it. In reviewing these policies for particular projects, we don't really expect that there'll be a extremely fine analysis of exactly the increment that is going to be needed to serve the particular development, but it's in there primarily, in our view, to guard against the lack of attention, to ignoring the consequences of approving infrastructure that isn't sufficient to take into account the needs of priority uses. It'll be a judgment call. It'll be a matter of great discretion and judgment when those are considered. But it is something that is considered all up and down the coast. And you know, we'll just have to work with the city when those projects come up that raise particular difficulties.
Okay, thank you. And if I heard it correctly, the 400-acre former Georgia Pacific Mill site in the coastal zone will be subject to a specific plan that will come back through the Coastal Commission for review and certification. Is that correct?
Yes, Commissioner, that's a proposed policy of the city.
Do we have, and I understand that the efforts are just underway with remediation, et cetera, do we have a sense of timing of when that will occur?
Well, I know that the city's been working hard on it. Perhaps that might be a question to direct to Ms. Jones.
Yeah, please, Ms. Jones, if you'd come back.
Yeah, Georgia Pacific, who's also in the
audience.
Could
you state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, yeah, Marie Jones, Community Development Director of City of Fort Bragg. And the City of Fort Bragg had a pre-bid meeting for consultants this past Wednesday. We had about 22 people come to that meeting. Proposals are due January the 26th. We expect to select someone in early February and get underway. So we're hoping to have the specific plan completed by the end of the year. It may take a little bit longer than that because, as Bob has mentioned, it's an extremely complex site and a very complex project. And really, we anticipate, I didn't mean to sound like I was griping. I know Tiffany and Robert intend to help us with this, but we really want to get involvement very early in the process because it is going to be such a complex project.
And then looking ahead to when the Coastal Commission will actually be dealing with that, I just wonder, I'd like some thought from maybe the executive director, particularly under constrained budgets, with the remoteness of Fort Bragg. And I would agree with the city that I think it'll be essential at that point in time that the Coastal Commission have on-the-ground visibility into that complex site and issues. Have we ever had any Coastal Commission meetings along that Mendocino coast? And if so, what would be the vision of how we would actually get commissioners there for that kind of situation? And it wasn't a pun.
We have considered it in the past, but the major impediment has been access to it.
Right.
And because where all the commissioners come from and the nature of our agendas, the people who have to come from various locations, and then also adequacy of facilities to accommodate the commission. I think it's the remoteness of it that's
right.
That's the more compelling.
Well, do you think, Peter, that at some point in the future when this becomes a reality for the commission that we'd have at least a day field trip over to review the site? Because I don't think it would be, in my mind, it certainly wouldn't be a matter that I would encourage commissioners to deal with without seeing this.
Well, I understand that, and we will certainly look into that. And I would certainly encourage individual commissioners, if you have the opportunity, to go visit the area to do that. And if you're going to do that, you can let us know and the city know, and I'm sure that accommodations can be made to lead you by the hand.
Okay.
Or foot. Thank you.
Or foot.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Wallen.
Yes, I'd like to compliment both the city staff and our staff. This is an enormous task that has been undertaken here, and I am assuming the city faces similar, if not as dire financial straits as we are. But given this, the lack of funding for adequate staff in the North Coast office, I looked at this and I'm not quite sure how you did manage to do all this work, because it's truly amazing. And I really would like to compliment the staff and on not only doing the work, but I think that in this you have really bent over backwards to try to help the city get what they want, but at the same time what is critical to this commission is to protect this and to uphold the Coastal Act. And I think that you've done an excellent job, and I'm certainly supportive of your modifications.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey?
Thank you. As an alternate, I wasn't here for the December meeting, but I want to be clear that the reason that we're recommending moving forward, even before the community of Fort Bragg has had an opportunity to look at these extensive changes, many of which are quite technical as I view them, is that we are out of time. Is that the reason that we can't allow for the process to be more direct than having to take an action and have them come back and propose something?
That's not the primary reason. Timing is obviously a factor, but the more important reason is that we need commission action so that the city can take that back to have a hearing on what it is that you do. It was one of the same issues that was raised with Marina Del Rey, the county saying there was nothing for us to have a hearing on because the commission hadn't acted. So now, if you act on this today, the city can take that back before they decide whether or not to accept your suggested modifications, so that they'll give their residents, citizens, an opportunity to participate. That's the way our process works.
Okay, then to the specific issue that the city raised, and again, I'm not completely clear, but one of the concerns that I heard raised is that by requesting that they anticipate all future development and size their utilities to accommodate that, they may be put in the position of being forced to fund infrastructure improvements that they don't have any resources to assist them in. Can someone on the staff give me some explanation as to how you see that concern applied across coastal communities and how we've dealt with that in other places, or how in this instance you're comfortable recommending that they just go figure that out?
Well, the priority use policies are in the Coastal Act itself, and so every LCP deals with this issue in one fashion or another. I don't think it's necessarily a case that to comply with the policy with mandate going off and expanding the infrastructure, as much as when approving these facilities, it's a matter of, with the limited capacity that is available, ensuring that a portion of that is reserved appropriately for those uses that the Coastal Act determines are priority over residential and other kinds of uses. You know, it may mean that certain non-priority uses in some cases maybe couldn't go forward if there isn't sufficient capacity. But if there isn't sufficient capacity to serve what's planned, then it may be a much bigger problem in terms of allowing development to go forward that has no way of being served. It is a difficult issue in certain individual contexts, and there's a lot of discretion that's required. And as I say, it's something that we'll have to look at closely on a case-by-case basis to see how that can be implemented for each situation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments from commissioners? All right, let me just add my comments, and that is to also congratulate the city of Fort Bragg for some tremendous work, and our staff as well. And I just want to point out to the rest of the commissioners that on this 400-acre parcel that was owned by Georgia Pacific, I've never seen such a comprehensive public process that's been designed by Fort Bragg. They have really opened it up for community participation. They're working with Georgia Pacific to make sure that the site is cleaned up so that they can make the uses mixed and as diverse as the Coastal Act allows. And I look forward to seeing that proposal coming forward in the future. But you're doing some great work in Fort Bragg, and we want to congratulate you on that. So we have a motion by Commissioner Schallenberger, a second by Commissioner Blank. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission therefore denies certification of the City of Fort Bragg's Land Use Plan Amendment 1-06 as submitted and adopt the findings in the staff report. And there are three other motions. Commissioner Schallenberger?
I move that the commission certify the City of Fort Bragg Land Use Plan Amendment FTBMAJ-1-06, if modified as suggested in the staff report, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Commissioner Hueso. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I would only to reiterate that there are, as I heard from the city, three outstanding issues. And I just, at this point, I think staff has made a very, very strong case that protection of Esha and giving priority use to coastal-related development along the coast are Chapter 3 policies. And in order to make this, at this point, consistent with the Coastal Act, it's very important that we do honor those policies. As the director, Douglas, said, it's conceivable that when you get down to a case-by-case, there may be other ways to honor these policies, but at this point, it's very important that we make sure that this amendment, our recommendations, are consistent with the Coastal Act, and therefore, I believe the staff has made a very strong case that the suggestions that they're, the modifications they're recommending, would do that. So I recommend a yes vote.
Okay, Commissioner Hueso?
I just want to echo the comments made by Commissioner Schallenberger.
All right, we have a motion and a second. The makers are recommending a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the certification of the land use plan with suggested modification and adoption of the resolutions and findings in the staff report. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby certifies the land use plan amendment, FTB-MAJ-1-06, for the city of Fort Bragg, as if modified, as suggested, and adopts the findings in the staff report. Motion 3.
I move the commission reject implementation program amendment number FTB-MAJ-1-06 for the city of Fort Bragg as submitted and recommend a yes vote.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Schallenberger, a second by Commissioner Hueso. They're recommending a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in rejection of the implementation plan amendment and the adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Hueso? No? All right. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Okay. Seeing none, Commissioner Schallenberger?
I move the commission certify implementation plan amendment number FTB-MAJ-1-06 for the city of Fort Bragg, if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and recommend a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Schallenberger and seconded by Commissioner Hueso. Passage of this motion will result in certification of the implementation program amendment with suggested modifications and the adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Are there any objections to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. I'm not going to object, but I want to reiterate the point that Peter Douglas made, which is that after the public process, if there are some language changes that the city of Fort Bragg feels meet the intent of the Coastal Act and the Coastal Staff's recommendation, that I would encourage you to be prepared to bring them back to us. I am a little bit uncomfortable with this today because I do feel as though there's a lot of information that has moved back and forth in a short amount of time, and although heroic efforts have been noted and duly noted, it seems to me that it's important to emphasize that we will come, when they come back, we will have an open mind to alternative language if you feel as though you meet the intent of what we're trying to achieve. Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Clark.
Yeah, I concur with those comments from my fellow commissioner.
All right. Let me ask if there's any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item. Okay, seeing none, the commission hereby certifies the implementation amendment for the city of Fort Bragg, if modified as suggested, and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report. And that concludes that item. And thank you all for attending the hearing and for your participation. And good luck with your public hearings in Fort Bragg. We look forward to seeing you again this year. Thank you. Okay. And staff, do we have a need for a bio break, or can we keep going? Keep going? All right. And we'll look to staff for the next staff report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next item is item 8A, which is the permit application of Caltrans to replace the Highway 101 Mad River bridges over Mad River in Humboldt County north of Arcata. The project also involves realignment of the Central Avenue on and off ramps. There are two handouts. There's a staff addendum, as I mentioned before, that contains some revisions to the condition and finding language, as well as some additional exhibits and correspondence. And then there is a second staff addendum that we realized after publication of the first addendum that we made a mistake in the drafting of Special Condition 5C, and so that just offers replacement language for that particular condition. I do have a brief PowerPoint presentation just to give you some orientation to the site, and I'd like to start that at this time. Thank you. I believe that's the right one. This first slide shows the existing bridge, the two separate bridges, actually, northbound and southbound ramp. That's the Mad River, and you can see the agricultural lands. I wish you take note of that as we proceed here. It's generally just north of Arcata and south of McKinleyville, kind of the north end of Humboldt and Arcata Bay. And the project involves several things. It will replace the bridges in a new alignment that's going to be slightly to the west of the existing bridge to allow for portions of the existing bridge to remain open during construction over the several-year period. There is a intersection just to the north of the bridge that will be reconstructed. It will include a multi-use path along the east side of the northbound bridge. Currently, there's very narrow shoulders and very hazardous to walk or bike past there, and this will provide for that opportunity. It does include lighting changes and provides for wider shoulders, which will be a benefit to bicyclists. This slide, in addition to showing the site at the top, I point out that when I talk about the agricultural mitigation, it involves a contribution to the College of the Redwoods agricultural program, which includes the management of a ranch down at Shively, and so you can see the relationship of those to the project site. here's a layout of the project. You can see how the black lines represent the new alignment slightly to the west, and also includes the interchange improvements. And here's some photos.
I think the mic is. You've got a problem with the mic. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Some photos at the top of the existing bridge. You can see the green is the northbound bridge as it exists now, and very narrow shoulders and very little opportunity for bicycling. The proposed new bridge will look as it's shown in the bottom. This bridge will include the ST10 style railing, and this is very similar to the ST10 mile railing that was adopted or approved for the 10 Mile River project, which is shown on the right. And as it shows the broader shoulders that will be available for bicyclists. And then this is the multi-use path on the northbound bridge, which is actually on the east side of the highway. And it's available, as you can see, for pedestrians and other public access users. And that's the end of the PowerPoint presentation. The project, in our review of it, has really raised two principal issues, and I understand that the applicant is accepting of the staff recommendation, but I do just want to spend a minute to point out there's some unique things about this application. First and foremost is with regard to the agricultural mitigation package. As you may have noted from the first slide, there's prime ag land that's going to be affected by the project, about 3 acres. And the area that would be converted from ag to bridge is not in an area that would conform with your agricultural conversion policies, 30241 and 30242. And so we believe that the project actually is not consistent with those policies. However, the bridge obviously serves a vital public access role as the principal conduit north and south along that part of the coast, and to not approve the project or some form of it and allow the bridge to deteriorate and collapse, we feel would be clearly inconsistent with your public access policies. And so we think there is a true conflict created by this situation, allowing you to use the conflict resolution provisions of the Coastal Act. And in doing so, the commission must judge what resolution is the most protective of coastal resources. And in this case, we feel the resolution that allows for the conversion of the agriculture in favor of the public access is the most protective. In large part, not only does it provide for the public access, but the agricultural impacts will be mitigated by a very significant mitigation program that was proposed by Caltrans that we're very excited about. The proposal includes a $2 million contribution to the ag program of the College of the Redwood, which is the local junior college in the area. $1.5 million of that would go to endow an agricultural science professorship in support of the college's agricultural program, where the interest would be providing the salary for a dedicated professor for that program. Currently, they have none. And then the additional $500,000 would be used for infrastructure and including transportation to get students back and forth from the college to the farm. The reason that we think this is important and protective of ag is twofold. One, not only does it further agricultural education and benefit the agricultural community and economy in general, but this also will allow the college to keep the Shively Farm as an active agricultural operation. The Shively Farm was willed to the college with provisions that if the college could not use it for its agricultural program, that the land would then be transferred to the Save the Redwoods League and planted in redwoods. And while that is certainly a desirable use too, it would mean the loss of 38 acres of agricultural land, prime land along the Eel River. Up until this proposal came forward, the college had been having difficulty in making the agricultural program go. As I mentioned, there hadn't been a full-time professor for the program, and the costs of trying to run the farm with the distance involved between the college and the farm created certain burdens in a climate where the college in general has been losing enrollment and losing state funding. We believe that this contribution from Caltrans will be hugely important, and we understand from the college that it will provide the means for the program to continue and ensure that the Shively Farm will not be then converted from agricultural use to some other use. So therefore, we believe on balance that approving the Mad River Bridges project and preserving the vital public access role, as well as the agricultural mitigation for the College of the Redwoods program, is on balance the most protective coastal resources, and we're recommending that the commission approve the project using Special Condition 19, which requires Caltrans to contribute the $2 million into a special fund for the ag program that would be established through an agreement between the college and its foundation and the commission. Which would control the mechanics of how the funds are used and for the purposes that it's used for. I should note that Caltrans has proposed this mitigation not only for this project, but for two other projects that have not yet been scheduled for a hearing or in some cases been submitted to the commission. These include the Alton Interchange project near Fortuna, which would involve creating a new interchange at Highway 101 and 36, and would involve the loss of approximately 43 acres, as well as a project up in Del Norte County called the Klamath Grade Raise, which would affect 2 acres of ag land. We believe that given the size of the Shively Farm and the added benefits to the agricultural program and the agricultural community and economy in the county that would result from the donation, that this is sufficient mitigation to mitigate all three projects. However, this commission cannot necessarily commit a future commission in its action, and there's no guarantees that a future commission would see it the same way. However, we have findings that would indicate that it is this commission's intention that it could be used for that, provided that the agricultural impacts of those projects are as anticipated. So with that, the other issue I'll just touch on, since I think we've come to agreement on, concerns the pile driving impacts on salmonids. Mad River is a very rich salmonid stream. The large piers that would need to be driven for the project will have acoustic impacts on salmon. The program that's been worked out to protect the salmon involves keeping within certain cumulative noise thresholds, primarily by limiting the amount of pile driving to 2 pile sections per day, in addition to having a fish exclusion zone with nets and weirs that are designed to keep the fish out of the area of harm, together with electrofishing to ensure that the fish are there removed prior to the pile driving. This is still going to have its challenges. There's a lot of uncertainty about how the threshold levels really affect fish, and so our recommendation includes various monitoring of acoustic impacts, as well as a proposal for a cage fish study that would relate the sound levels to impacts on fish. As I say, we've had lots of discussion about this issue, but I'm happy to say that I understand we've come to agreement with the Caltrans staff on this issue. So I do note that the addendum does contain modifications to our conditions and findings that we've worked out with Caltrans. And then there's the further addendum that changes the one condition 5C that's in front of you as well. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Douglas, do you have anything to add?
No, I think Bob very adequately reviewed the agricultural mitigation component, which is very innovative, and we're really pleased about that. And I just want to underscore, in our conversation with the College of the Redwoods, we made it very clear that we are going to expect an agreement that will ensure transparency, accountability, and assure us that the funding will actually be used for the purpose that it was intended for. And they're very excited about it. We're very excited about implementing this. And I want to compliment Caltrans for their creativity in coming up with this idea. And I hope that's a sign of what we have to look forward to in other projects that are coming our way.
All right, very good. Let me ask if there are any ex parte communications from the commissioners. Seeing none, then we'll open the public hearing. And we have, I believe, five speakers from Caltrans and a speaker from College of the Redwoods. So we'll start with Caltrans Director Charlie Fielder, and we were going to give you about 15 minutes if that works. There are no speakers in opposition.
Thank you very much. I'm Charlie Fielder, Caltrans District 1 Director, and the other Caltrans speakers, our cards are in only if you have questions in detail. I want to acknowledge the local staff, the commission staff, as well as the Caltrans staff, and working together to come up with an innovative solution for what I call a very complicated project. This is a seismic, safety, and scour mandated project that we have to replace this structurally deficient bridge. Not only is it a vital link between the North Coast, it is also going to be providing a much-needed pedestrian access, protected access, between McKinleyville and Arcata. Earlier today, we saw a picture of the Noyo River Bridge, which brought back some memories for me, and I was mentioning to one person that sometimes growth is painful, but it's necessary. And I think we've developed quite a bit from the days of the development of the Noyo River Bridge. And a lot of the features that were incorporated in that bridge were incorporated in other bridges, as well as this Mad River Bridge here. And I also would like to point out that the relationship between Caltrans and the commission staff is been very good. And I've been very impressed on how hard our staff, the commission staff, have worked up until the latest hours in making some of the final revisions to develop a project that we support, that they support, that is buildable, and will also be protecting the coastal resources. The ag proposal, in my mind, is a win-win situation for the immediate parties involved with CR, not just for people today, but for future generations as well. We're proud to be part of that mitigation plan, what it represents to the College of the Redwoods, the community, and the North Coast, and we request that the commission approve the staff report and allow us to proceed to construction.
Very good. Thank you very much. And the rest of the Caltrans folks are here for questions. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Then we'll... Commissioner
Chair
McKenzie.
Neely, if I could ask Mr. Fielder a question.
We usually wait till after we have a motion on the floor. But
oh, okay.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Charlie. Jeff Bobbitt?
Thank you very much. I'm Jeff Bobbitt. I'm the vice president at College of the Redwoods, which is the California community college that serves the far northern coast of our state. I'd like to take just a second at the outset here just to briefly apologize for my a little casual appearance today. As you know, I also was caught up in the travel difficulties yesterday, and I'm currently hoping that my luggage catches up with me in time to
before
get on the plane
home
for the return trip. We'll have to wait and see when the meeting is over if that actually happens or not. I don't have a formal presentation for you today. I'm here primarily to represent the college and to answer questions about the project. I do have just a couple of comments that I would like to make. The first being to acknowledge what an absolute tremendous pleasure it has been to work with the staff of the commission and our colleagues on the staff at Caltrans in working on this particular project. We have been at it for a number of months, and it has been just a genuine pleasure to work with both of those agencies, and we appreciate that more than we can say. The only other comment that I'd like to make is just maybe observations about importance. I obviously think that this is a very important project, and I think it's important for two reasons. I turned that thing
on. We usually confiscate phones when they go off.
I'm about to throw this one away.
Well, throw it my way. I need one.
About to throw it away. I told it. I apologize for that. I told it to shut up earlier. It's dead now. A couple of comments about importance. This is obviously an important project for the college. It represents an opportunity for us to further develop what has been one of our most successful and longest-serving programs with the college, the agricultural program. We are in a very rural agricultural region up there. Agriculture is very important to our community. The college is an important provider of agricultural education for that district, and it is obviously important for the college. In addition to that, and this may be just a personal observation, I've been in higher education administration for about 37 years. I've been an amateur student of public process for all my professional career. And I will have to say that I never thought I could see a chance when three public agencies, particularly in a time that we're in right now where there is so much antagonism about government, there is so much tension between public agencies. I was reading this morning, you know, the potential effect of the governor's budget on higher education and the community colleges, and here we go again in another round of contention and fight over money and power. And it is such a breath of fresh air for me after watching this for all these years to imagine that three different public agencies could come together and put together a project that would benefit the community and the students of the community in a way that this particular project will. And I remain absolutely impressed more than anything else about the way that was able to come about with the hard work of the people that were involved. And with that, I will leave the podium and remain here if there are any questions that come up from any commissioners about the project. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
All right. Thank you. And that's the end of the public testimony. We'll go back to staff.
Don't have any comments, Madam Chair.
Nothing additional. All right. Then I'll bring it to the commission. Commissioner Schallenberger is first.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 1-07-013, subject to conditions set forth in the staff recommendations specified below, and ask for a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Schallenberger, a second by Commissioner Hueso. They're recommending a yes vote. Passage of this motion would result in approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Well, only to say that in addition to those things that have been said about what a creative solution this is and how wonderful it's been seeing the staffs of these three public agencies working together, it's going to have really nice railings.
Thanks to you. Commissioner Hueso, no comments. Commissioner Juan?
Yes, I have just a couple of comments. I mean, I'll be supporting this. One has to do with the ag easement and the ag, the destruction of ag lands. I think that this is certainly fine for this project. The shape, what's the name of the farm? The Shagley Farm. It's 38 acres. We're losing about 4 acres here. But I have to say that it shouldn't be taken that the three projects that were mentioned total 49 acres. And so you shouldn't make the assumption that you're going to, that this is going to be adequate for loss of all 49 acres. It's certainly more than adequate for the loss of this acres and some other acreage, but whether it's adequate enough for 49 acres is something that this commission is going to have to decide on later on. And then, while I would like to give some credit to Mary Schallenberger and actually her predecessors on the bridge commission's bridge railing, which I think were Shirley Detloff was the first one, and then Chris Desser was the next one. I was here during the Noyo Bridge issue, and I do have to give my thanks to the person who is really responsible for having set both agencies on the right task, and that's Vince Taylor. He's the one who made the issue about the railings. He's the one who pushed all of us into this, and he's actually... What happened with these railings is really a testimony to what one citizen can do if he's really persistent and insistent.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Kinsey?
Thank you. First, I appreciate learning the ropes, Madam Chair. I also want to acknowledge the agricultural provisions. We are fighting hard all across coastal California to hold on to our agriculture, and this not only protects farming in one location, but it protects a future farming by investing in the education. So I think that's really especially important. My fellow commissioners may not know, but I serve as the chair of the fishery network for the Central California coastal counties outside of my responsibilities on the Coastal Commission. So I think it's very important to see the level of commitment there is to fishery protection. In my role as a transportation commissioner for the Bay Area, we had the challenge with Caltrans of replacing the Carquinez Bridge, and there we spent literally tens of millions of dollars on the challenges that are associated with pile driving in fish habitat, and some very interesting techniques were developed of air entrainment around the pile driving, and I'll just bring it forward today. I know Caltrans certainly pays attention within its organization to the technology that was developed to deal with a problem that at that time was costing endangered fish. One other special interest that I want to bring forward as a supervisor of a rural area is that I pay very close attention whenever my own public works department, but also when Caltrans becomes involved in improvements. And if we look at the bridge design on the left, you see that's the existing bridge. If you look at the bridge design on the right, the proposed bridge, what you see is the introduction of large lighting standards. And I like the night sky. I like the rural area. Miles and miles of road or travel without lighting. I didn't see anything about lighting in this, and I just wondered if Mr. Fielder felt as though he was under some tort responsibility to have lighting standards, or whether we could allow the quiet night to continue. Mr. Fielder, if you could, or through the chair, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Absolutely. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Charlie Fielder, Caltrans District 1 Director, Eureka. And the lighting that you see on the bridge right there is no longer there. The only lighting that will be part of this project is the required lighting at the off-ramps, the road connections for the intersection. But the lighting that you see crossing the water on top of the bridge has been removed based upon comments that we've heard before.
Great. Thank you very much.
That's an excellent
thank
question.
You,
yeah, thank you. All right, we have a motion and a second, and the makers are recommending a yes vote. Any other discussion? Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the motion passes unanimously, and the commission hereby approves a coastal development permit for the proposed project subject to the conditions specified in the staff report and on the grounds that the development as conditioned will be in conformity with the policies of Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. Thank you very much.
It's always amazing what can be done when you work out all the problems before we get here.
That's true. And I would like to join the rest of the commission in complimenting the agencies on some great work and our staff as well. Thank you.
Okay. Just a couple of comments on items that were brought up yesterday. I should note that I was asked this morning in light of the governor's budget and the closure of all the state parks that were part of that, including state beaches. The question was, since that changes the intensity of use and access to coastal waters, doesn't that require a coastal permit before we enclose all these beaches? I've asked legal staff to look into that. And, we'll report back to you in a couple of years.
Just a second.
The other item was Susan Hansch indicated that she did go through the budget last night. And there are no, she could not identify any cuts in the commission's budget in the current fiscal year. So what I reported to you yesterday about the 17 PY positions that would be eliminated is for next fiscal year, if that stands. And then relative to the enforcement issue at Driftwood properties in Laguna Beach, we're trying to negotiate a consent order relative to the sandbag issue there. The problem is that the discussions have bogged down because the Athens group that owns the property doesn't agree with Dr. Dixon's Esha memo, and they don't think that the area where the sandbags are going is Esha, so negotiations are kind of bogged down. If they don't proceed, we're going to come forward with a unilateral cease and desist order. Relative to the area where the Crown Beard was, the Athens group is in compliance with the order. They have planted Crown Beard, and they've removed the acacia that was there, and they've met the required deadlines. However, one of the issues, problems, is that they were required to plant ceanothus in December in this area, but they haven't done that because subsequent to that order by the commission, the city's fire chief and the city created a fuel break there based on a declaration of nuisance. And you can't plant ceanothus in fire breaks because of the flammability, I guess. So we're trying to figure out what that means and what needs to be done. And we do have a notice of violation out to the Athens group relative to a lot line adjustment. So that's my understanding there of what the status is at this point. I'm not sure that responds to what Ms. Aaliyah was saying, but that's the best I can do in terms of a status report today.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Clark, you had a comment?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Peter, just to follow up on the state budget and Susan's presentation two meetings ago, as I recall, she identified for the commission that there was several unfunded elements that are involved in the dynamics of our budget, including salary increases, I think to the tune of $125,000 that's unfunded, and increases in rent. It's good news that the 17 staff cut isn't this fiscal year, but maybe you were, could comment, what are we doing about those unfunded budget issues that are hitting us now?
Well, the current fiscal year, and we've discussed this with the budget subcommittee, we are doing everything we can to make sure we end the fiscal year not in deficit. We have laid off four staff members who were on limited term, that is that they were not permanent civil service employees. So those folks are gone, and in fact, I think today was the last day. We have also not filled vacant positions that have occurred as a result of staff resigning, taking other positions, and of course, unfortunately, the tragic death of one of our staff members. Those are positions that we're not going to be able to fill. The travel freeze that we've imposed. We have gotten some grants that we had not been able to count on when Susan made the report. One is an energy impact grant from the Resources Agency that we had been promised but hadn't received, which contributed to the deficit because we had anticipated that. We now have that. We're getting close to where I can tell you that we're going to be able to end the fiscal year not in deficit. But we're not there yet. And we'll be meeting with the budget subcommittee probably by telephone conference call in the next a week or so to discuss where we are and what the next steps are going to be. So that's the current year situation.
Thank you.
All right. Any other comments? We have one public comment speaker.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Douglas, when we approved the fee increases, I made a comment at that time that I support to do so if we were able to use it towards personnel. What is the latest on that?
A couple of things, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I failed to, in response to Commissioner Clark's question, identify one other aspect relative to the proposed budget. We have talked to the Department of Finance, and we are going to be suggesting a special fund to be created that would have a portion of the fees that result from the increase in fees be deposited in that fund to improve services to the people who have business before the commission. In other words, it would come to the commission for its use, which would help us better be able to service the people that have business with the commission. Whether or not that'll fly, I don't know, but I have a feeling it may, because the budget that the governor proposed included about $550,000, I believe, for commission operations, which includes the rent. It doesn't nearly cover the costs, but it's better than nothing. That would come out of the fees. That has to be approved by the legislature. So the idea that you had and suggested about linking some of the fee increases, that is the fee increase that doesn't go to the Coastal Conservancy, to the commission's ability to provide services, we're following through on that.
One more question.
All right. Mm-hmm.
The vacancies that you're keeping them vacant, would you be able to get credit towards the 17th in the fiscal year, or you'd rather fill those up and wait till the fiscal year? And
two things. One is that we can't fill them because we don't have the money to pay them in order to, because of the deficit we're running right now for the current fiscal year. If the 17 PY cut stands after the legislature gets through working through the budget, my guess is that as what happened last time we went through this in 2003, all those vacant positions will probably be eliminated and we will lose them. So Right now, we can't fill them for purposes of the current fiscal year deficit, and if the budget cuts go through for next year, they'll be permanently eliminated. That's my anticipation.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Well, it just seemed this is the right time to reiterate a little bit of what Commissioner Burke said at our last meeting about the work of the Budget Committee. And one of the things, just to put my fellow commissioners on notice, I'm confident that we'll be asking each commissioner to take a much more active role this coming year in the budget process. And it's important that we do it targeted and that we do it at the right time. But each of us has connections. Certainly the local government people all have connections with your assembly members and senators, and each of us has connections with our appointing body. So I anticipate, and we've talked about one of the things that we will come out with is kind of a plan for what commissioners can do to actually help as we move through the budget process. Because, as you know, the governor's budget that was just introduced, really joking aside, has a long way to go before it becomes the budget for 08-09. And so I anticipate for the first time, rather than to continue to look at staff only as the people to report back to us what's happening in the Capitol and with budget hearings and that kinds of things, this budget subcommittee that you've appointed is going to look to you to individually to have a much more active role. Again, I just want to reiterate, timing is important and message is important. So that's part of what the plan will have. And the other thing that we are, of course, looking at is how this commission can reduce its own costs. I mean this body, not the agency. So it's another thing we keep looking to staff for what are they doing to reduce costs and not filling, but we're going to be also coming up with suggestions, which we will, of course, have to agree to, but how we can reduce our own costs going forward.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Clark?
Yes. Commissioner Schellenberg's first point, in fact, was very timely because, as it turns out, this commissioner is going to be in Sacramento Monday and Tuesday. We have an annual legislative interaction trip for my council and many city councils in Southern California. As the budget's released, I will be interfacing with several legislators on Monday and Tuesday, and maybe Mary, you and Peter and I can talk about some of the themes and messages I ought to be taking. I think I know them, but particular points that I ought to be making with some of the legislators that I'm going to be meeting with and the administration. Thank you.
Okay, and I think also those of us who are members of either the League of California Cities or the California Supervisors Association ought to add to their legislative platforms at the state level support of the Coastal Commission activities and budgets so that they can show a more united front, not just from us as an agency, but from all the local governments whose plans are not progressing as quickly as they'd like because of budget cuts. So that's yes. Something that we can do as well.
Madam Chair, I forgot to mention yesterday in my report that just a reminder that you have to complete the ethics training item that we discussed before. And we are going to try to come back to this facility in the future because they did make this meeting room available for free, which saved us substantial costs. So we'll be talking to the hotel, and from now on we're going to only be able to go to places where we get the meeting room for free.
Okay, very good. And then we have one speaker under public comment, and that is Dr. David DeLange.
I'm David DeLange, and I want to come here just briefly to thank the commission and each commissioner for your votes on Wednesday with respect to Marina Del Rey. I also, though I'm not in a position to say I'm sorry, because I can't apologize for others, I want to say that in my assessment of what went wrong in the unruly and unkind behavior on the part of the public toward the commission, I saw some lack of information, and I saw also some mental disturbance. That's my department. And for the lack of information, that got corrected by your vote and your deliberations. I can't do much about the mental disturbance because I'm just one practitioner. But they have been referred to my office by others. We have a fairly happy encampment. The campers are fairly happy in Marina Del Rey, though we recognize that the campsite needs a bunch of work, and we also want to say several of us felt the receptivity of staff who we disagreed with and the commission disagreed with on our issues about Marina Del Rey. In the wake of this all, the attitude of staff of receptivity toward your decision was very encouraging. So thanks to Peter Douglas for that, a chat last night. Goodbye. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Dr. DeLang, and thanks to everyone. I believe that's all we have on the agenda today. Okay. So
we always appreciate it when the commission overrules the staff.
Right. And that concludes our meeting. Thank you, everyone.